Part 2. Targets. 4. Of sources and files. The making of the Securitate target, Ana Novotz. Corina L. Petrescu. Files produced by the secret police forces of former Eastern Bloc countries are complex documents, not completely reliable and yet not fully untrustworthy either. Or, as the British historian Timothy Garton Ash has remarked, there is a truth that can be found in a secret police file. Not a single absolute truth with a capital T, but still a real and important one. As historical documents, texts anchored in a time and place and resulting from specific circumstances, files in general supplement or rework reality and are never mere sources that divulge facts about reality. In thinking with Paul Ricoeur, secret police files prefigure meaning. That is to say, they provide a network of everyday life occurrences and their interpretation through the eyes of the people and institutions that produce them, which call forth narrative and make storytelling possible. They bear the quality of as-yet-untold stories that constitute the living imbrication from which a told story emerges. As they amass documents verified by the various people who wrote, commented, approved, or reviewed the information therein. This leaves researchers who turn their attention to them, regardless of their field of expertise, in need of organizing, analyzing, and making sense of this information, which can only come about through critical engagement with the material at hand and its proper contextualization. After all, as Cornelia Wissmann has shown, when files are opened to reveal their contents, they are not simply read. Files are processed. Thus, researchers configure meaning through emplotment. They sew the information in the files into a story with characters, events, and settings that depicts a time and place. Emplotment has a mediating function, as it renders these elements meaningful in the context of a larger whole, and by so doing, it creates a unity that has a narrative and temporal structure that endows the constitutive elements with an explanatory role. This allows any reader of the researcher's story to follow and refigure it in the act of reading by extracting from it an abstract hypothetical time and integrating it into a lived, real one. The reader can bring to light unaffected links between circumstances, agents, actors, or motives by drawing connections between the researcher's story and a reader's own knowledge of events that have occurred since and given the story another angle. In this sense, and returning once more to Ricoeur, the reader enters the world of the narrative and completes the story, which becomes a joint work of the researcher's text and the reader. According to Valentina Glajar, a productive method for literary scholars to process and configure files is to unearth the file story encapsulated in each file. She defines the term as a multi-layered and polyphonic biographical act that combines the pieces of information offered by the files with the gaps equally present in them. This collage is precarious and capricious, as any overlooked or missing detail in the file has the potential of disturbing or rearranging the life fragments captured between the covers of the file. In my analysis of Securitate files, I build on Glajar's work and suggest that file stories unveil an identity of the surveilled that the secret police have constructed, which is that of a target, objectif. Consequently, when configuring a file story from the porous material in a file, one can primarily unveil a surveilled person's target identity. The distinguishing traits of character and behavioral patterns that stirred the Securitate's interest and motivated the person's shadowing. As it reflects a secret police's take on the surveilled at a given time and in a specific context, this target identity does not necessarily correspond to reality, nor does it have to. Ultimately, it serves the secret police's intention vis-à-vis an individual deemed suspicious, which is to police and discipline her or him. The closest expression of a surveilled's own views comes in her or his filed intercepted correspondence. Even though the voice behind the letters can be equivocated by self-censorship or code talk if the person has suspected surveillance. When the surveilled's own voice comes to life in wiretapped conversations, it is also distorted and feeds into the individual's target identity. No recordings of wiretaps have been found in the archives of the former Securitate, so only transcripts of conversations are available. Whether penned, verbatim, or in summary, they are mediated through the Securitate employees who transcribed or summarized them for their superiors. The employee's voice thus blurs the surveilled's by determining which aspects of the conversations to stress. Indispensable to the construction of a target identity are the informative notes and reports that sources produced for their case officers. During Romania's years of communism, source was a general term designating a person through which the Securitate could collect information irrespective of her or his specific capacity in the hierarchy of the secret police's informative services, which included the support person, the agent, the collaborator, the informant, the resident, and the party member. The materials that sources provided expressed not only what they knew or learned about the individual under surveillance, but also their sentiments about the person on whom they spied. Depending on their attitudes toward the surveilled, the reports could seem harmless or hurtful, apologetic or damning, but in any case, they were a breach of trust and a betrayal. In this chapter, I examine how two Securitate sources, Magda and Carl Fischer, helped shape the target identity of playwright and novelist Anna Novats, 1924 to 2010. Their informative notes are included in Novats' own surveillance file, I-264-513. February 28th to November 29th, 1963, and in the file of her former husband, Paul Schuster, I-184937, Volume 1, September 1961 to January 1963. What emerges from them is not the complex personality of a female playwright and Shoah survivor, but an objectified Securitate target. Both sources portray Novats as a subversive element and an enemy of the state, a deviant with a bourgeois lifestyle and an open and vocal critic of Romania's communist regime. She is said to have ties to foreigners who helped her smuggle her work out of Romania and eventually emigrate herself. To anchor the file story into Novats' existence prior to her surveillance, I reconstruct her life story, in the absence of an Anna Novats Nachlass anywhere, based on Novats' own statements in the preface to her first publication in a Western country in 1967, on research in the Paul Schuster Nachlass in Munich, and on Novats' last two interviews before her death in 2010. Also, to explain Novats' fall from grace with the communist regime, without which her file story is incomprehensible, I recreate that context based on articles published about Novats in the magazine Theatrul, The Theater, between 1956 and 1958. This was the main theater publication at the time and articulated the official discourse of the Romanian state with respect to dramatic art. Anna Novaț's life story. Anna Novaț was the pen name of Zimra Harsanyi, now a forgotten writer who lived in Romania until 1963, when she immigrated to Budapest, then West Berlin, finally arriving in Paris in 1965. In Romania, she wrote socialist realist plays in her mother tongue, Hungarian, which were also translated into Romanian and Yiddish and performed to great acclaim. In France, Novaț wrote mostly autobiographical plays and novels in French and Romanian. The latter she then translated into French either by herself or with the help of friends such as the writer, translator, and Russian studies scholar Luba Jorgensen. Even though she had longed to live in Paris, life in the French capital seems to have disappointed her badly. In one of her last interviews for a German newspaper, she declared, "French became my homeland, but never France. Das Französische ist meine Heimat geworden, das Land nie." She voiced her disillusionment also when she declared that Auschwitz had proven a disaster for her literary work, since it had turned her into a survivor, Überlebende, and thus had denied her the status of a living being, Lebende, and implicitly a life, no matter where she dwelled. Novaț's life story is worth knowing because it showcases the tragic fate of an East European Jew during the 20th century, when first nationalism and fascism and later communism uprooted and almost decimated the Jewish community in Transylvania. Born into a low middle-class Jewish family in northern Transylvania in 1924, Zimra Harsanyi was by law a Romanian citizen, but her family followed the traditional way of Transylvanian Jewry, which was Hungarian by mother tongue and culture. In view of Transylvania's complex history, this was a common situation. Until the demise of the Austro-Hungarian monarchy in 1918, this province had belonged to the Kingdom of Hungary, where Jews had been emancipated in 1867, and as a result, in the 1890 census, 63.7% of the Jewish population was recorded as ethnic Hungarian by mother tongue, 33% as German, and 3.3% as other. After World War I, Transylvania became part of the Romanian Kingdom and remained a Romanian territory until 1940, when, per the Second Vienna Dictate, the province's northern part was returned to Hungary. Between May 16th and June 27th, 1944, the Hungarian government of Regent Miklós Horthy had northern Transylvanian Jews deported to Auschwitz. And although on separate transports, Novaț and her family were among them. Only she survived, and after May 6, 1945, when the Soviet army freed Kratzau, the concentration camp to which she had been transferred, she returned to northern Transylvania, which was again a part of the Romanian kingdom. She brought along a diary she had kept over the course of her year of imprisonment. By her own statements, Novaț spent the next 2 years in the Jewish hospital in Cluj and in 1950 moved to Bucharest, where she lived until 1963, when she immigrated to Hungary by entering a mariage de complaisance with a Hungarian national. Of her previous 3 marriages, 2 had long-term consequences. Her second husband was the mathematician Liviu Solomon, whom she divorced in 1956, but with whom she maintained contact her entire life. On June 21, 1958, she married the German-Romanian writer Paul Schuster. Even though this relationship also ended in divorce in 1960, Novaț and Schuster continued a close relationship until Schuster's death in 2004. In the early 1950s in Bucharest, Zimra Hasanyi became the writer Anna Novats and joined the Communist Party, as she sympathized with its ideals. By the mid-1950s, Anna Novats was a promising playwright. Theater houses across the country performing in Romanian, Hungarian, and Yiddish successfully staged her plays since they were in line with the requirements of socialist realism. For example, Familia Kovács, the Kovács family, depicts the fate of an upper-middle-class ethnic Hungarian family in northern Transylvania between 1941 and 1943. Caught up in their bourgeois lifestyle, the parents do not notice the dangers of fascism until it is too late, and their own son joins the Nazis. Under the influence of a young communist named András, the family's daughter Eva overcomes her light-hearted and apolitical disposition and joins the anti-fascist struggle because, as she explains, when you listen to the communists, everything gains a different color. Even the air brightens up. You feel like a better, stronger person. In any case, you would want to fight, to write, to speak, to do great, unusual things, as if happiness were only up to you and you only had to want it. At the end of the fourth act, the father loses his mind, unable to process his social downfall. The son commits suicide as the German defeat at Stalingrad draws nearer, while the mother, the daughter, and her now husband András are active members of the communist underground. Thus, the superior communist cause triumphs over both fascism and bourgeois liberalism. Novats's next play, Prelude, is equally embedded in socialist realism. In a provincial town, the communists establish a theater school to train actors who can perform in accordance with the new principles of the so-called people's democracy. They recruit new actors among people from various walks of life, workers, a former ballerina, a teacher, the descendant of a bourgeois family, and retrain old theater people, a diva and a theater director, to embrace their ideals. The play's central theme is We Built Socialism, and it illustrates it by focusing on the trials and tribulations that transform a group of individuals into a collective between 1946 and 1949. In 1957, Novats received the State Prize Third Class for these two plays, which brought her not only official recognition and fame, but also a substantial monetary reward of 15,000 lei. Novats' next work completely changed her life. On December 24, 1957, the play Che fel de om esti tu, What Kind of a Person Are You?, opened in Bucharest at the Municipal Theater, where Lucia Sturcea Bulandra, the grand dame of the Romanian stage at the time, was manager, Institutul Național al Patrimoniului. Shortly after the premiere, Lucia Sturcea Bulandra mentioned the play favorably in an article, while other critics praised it for its partisan zeal and ideological pathos, proclaiming it an admirable drama, even if a failed one, due to confused formulations. Yet in March 1958, in a review published anonymously under the title Așa arată oare o piesă de actualitate, Is This What a Topical Play Looks Like, in the party journal Scintea, The Spark, its author reproached the playwright with having wrongly constructed her characters, whose problems she considered from profoundly erroneous perspectives. This led to a false conception of the play, which absurdly opposed the preoccupation and the efforts for the construction of the socialist economy to the concern for the improvement of the life conditions of the working people, and grave ideological deficiency. Other publications followed suit, and the play metamorphosed into a work infused by a negative spirit, written from false ideological positions, and Novats was admonished for not admitting her ideological deviation and performing self-criticism. It did not help that she defended her work in an article in the cultural publication Tribuna, the Tribune, by invoking the autonomy of art and a writer's right to artistic freedom. Consequently, she was excluded from the party in 1958 and the Writers' Union in 1960, and was blacklisted. That is, while she was not officially banned from publishing or her plays from being performed, her works were neither printed nor staged ever again in communist Romania. Anna Novats's file story. One would expect the Securitate to pay attention to such a high-profile artist gone astray, and it did. Even though not at the height of Novats's conflict with the cultural authorities in 1958. Indeed, the first surveillance file under the name Novats Anna is only from 1960. And according to the decision to close it on November 25, 1960, Novats had been included in the file Uniuni Scriturilor Writers' Union by mistake. It is source Magda's informative note from January 9, 1959, included in Shusta's file, that brought Novats into the Securitate's spotlight. Magda is a very elusive character in Novats's file story. In a document from March 26, 1963, outlining her responsibilities vis-à-vis Shusta, she referred to herself as H.P., and in a report from December 21, 1965, she indicated that she was the granddaughter of Michael Albert, a 19th-century Transylvanian Saxon writer and pedagogue. Aside from this, no other information about her is available. The reasons for her collaboration with the Securitate are not apparent from the files at hand, yet her habitus as an informant suggests that she might have been a vigilante. When she first wrote about Novats in January 1959, the playwright was a mere collateral target, as the Securitate was primarily interested in Schuster's activities in Romania and his ties to the German-Romanian émigrés in the Federal Republic of Germany. Magda's main objective in producing intelligence about Novats appears to have been to show the Securitate Novats's true colors. She titled her first informative note dedicated to Novats, "The Writer Anna Novats, An Enemy of Our Regime," when it was not customary for notes to have titles, and wrote, "This is the true face of the writer Anna Novak," in the note's concluding paragraph, while accusing her of the worst crime against the Romanian state at the time when she labeled Novats an enemy of the regime. She also dutifully brought to the Securitate's attention that Novats was working on her Auschwitz diary. She indicated that she had met Novats at the end of 1958, while working as Schuster's dactylographer in her house. She described Novats as a woman in her 30s, slender, pale, with a fashionable short haircut, who did not wear makeup, walked around the house in pajamas and a robe, and worked on her diary mostly in bed. Such a routine hardly conformed to the expectations of a communist state vis-à-vis its subjects, and Magda's information put Novats in danger by presenting her as a deviant with a bourgeois lifestyle. Furthermore, Magda emphasized that Novats was congenial and smart, but also an open and vocal critic of Romania's political regime. She even went so far on one occasion as to call the East Germans jackasses, dobitoci, and criticize them for having fallen prey to the same proletarian zeal as the Romanians. According to Magda, Novats reproached the Romanian regime disdainfully for keeping people in chains and ordering them what to think. She was very proud of her lack of inhibition in expressing criticism and confided in Magda with great satisfaction that she had been excluded from the party. As if to validate her claims about Novats, Magda maintained that Novats had taken a liking to her from the start and talked to her freely, as though they had known each other for years. During one of their frank conversations, Novats supposedly declared that Anne Frank's diary was a trifle, un Fleck, and hers was a serious work, which was why she was working on it at the time. It is noteworthy that Magda initiated her reporting on Novats. She was even unsure whether the information would be of interest to her case officer, as exemplified by her direct questions. Does any of this interest you? Can I be of help in any matter? Toward the end of her informative note. She seems to have volunteered her services to the secret police after being faced with Novats's ungratefulness vis-à-vis the Romanian regime. While Novats complained about her miserable life, the regime afforded her a 10-day writing retreat in the mountain resort of Sinia, in which Novats partook happily. It comes as no surprise that Magda's case officer, Lieutenant Major Aneta Roșianu, instructed her to deepen her relationship with Novats and keep informing on her, which Magda did diligently. Magda's subsequent informative notes leave no doubt about her rejection of Novats in terms of lifestyle and personality. On January 14, 1959, she reported on what she perceived to be tensions between Shusta and Novats, who, per Magda, thought herself to be considerably superior to her husband, whom she denigrated in front of Magda as an adventurous and undisciplined person. Magda portrayed Novats as a dissatisfied, nagging wife, who nonetheless spent 10 days in Sinia working on her own writing, while her presumably irresponsible husband had to procure firewood for their house in Bucharest in order to be able to work there himself. The comparison between the two clearly favored Shusta, even before Magda wrote, "Paul Shusta is a very kind man, and he works with great enthusiasm, but he is constantly despised by his own wife, Anna Novats." The juxtaposition passes judgment on Novats for her alleged disdain for a husband who, Magda suggested, was a dedicated homemaker. Magda cemented her portrayal of Novats as a parasite who took advantage of Shusta in the next available note she penned on September 17, 1962. She informed her case officer that Shusta had approached her to type up Novats's Auschwitz diary, even though at that point Shusta and Novats were divorced and Shusta had remarried. Novats had tried to publish the diary in Romania, but it had been rejected, which left her only with the option to smuggle it out of Romania and find a publisher abroad. To this end, without his wife's knowledge, Shusta helped Novats by editing and translating the diary into German. He is said to have considered it a unique manuscript and an extremely valuable document that would bring great success. Shusta's concern for Novats and her spinelessness are further emphasized in Magda's next informative note from October 25, 1962, in which she related her attempts to get Shusta to talk about his progress on Novats's diary. Claiming that he had not made the desired progress, as he had translated only 2/3 of the diary by that time, Shusta also confessed to the source that he was apprehensive for Novats's safety should her diary be smuggled out of Romania while she still lived there. Consequently, he wanted to wait until she had left the country, which Magda asserted he believed she would do with help from abroad. Again, in her writing, Magda placed Novats outside the norms of socialist society by bestowing on her a form of behavior incongruous with the state's expectations. When she reported that Novats was unemployed, yet received monthly financial support from her last two husbands, who paid her 300 lei each. Compared to the net average salary of 880 lei, Novats seems to have enjoyed a modestly comfortable income, 600 lei, without participating herself in the country's workforce. Source Carl Fischer has a stronger presence in Novats' file story, as he authored or provided his case officers with the information for 19 informative notes, which covered the time span August 1961 to October 1963. He was himself a writer, and during those years, the editor of the German-language newspaper Neuer Weg, New Way. His reasons for spying on her are not apparent from his notes or reports, but his prolificacy left few aspects of her life untouched. He wrote about her tireless efforts to survive as a writer, about her troubled love life and frail health, about her complicated plans to find a way out of Romania, and about her Auschwitz diary. He provided details that flesh out Novats's image that Magda had drawn of her. He informed about her frustration with the cultural authorities who had rejected two new plays she had written, documenting Novats's persistence to have her works performed in Romania in spite of being blacklisted. He claimed that in a conversation with him, Novats rationalized from the state's point of view her exclusion from the Writers' Union and the subsequent impossibility to publish by admitting her inability to compromise, since she was an enemy of any absolutist system. On November 21, 1962, he mentioned for the first time the two aspects that became the focus of his reporting on Novats: her desire to emigrate and her Auschwitz diary. While Schuster had alluded to Magda that Novats was exploring the possibility to emigrate with help from abroad, Carl Fischer, who enjoyed Novats's trust, provided specific details about her plan. She wanted to marry a Hungarian national and relocate with him to Hungary. The source maintained that even though Novats had accepted a job as a pediatric medical consultant in a small town, which paid 500 lei per month and allowed her to live like a czar, she had made up her mind to leave Romania because she needed to feel free to travel and move around, as this had become her obsession since Auschwitz. Novats's goal-oriented matrimonial plans, while surely not uncommon even in communist Romania, positioned her outside the proclaimed official moral norms of mainstream society and added promiscuity to her target identity. Carl Fischer's note enhanced this aspect of her constructed personality even more when he indicated that Novats had confided in him that she was willing to abandon her emigration plans should she be able to rekindle her relationship with Schuster. Considering that Schuster was married to Edith Gross at the time, Novats's desire attested to her deviant sexual propensity. Carl Fischer brought further evidence of Novats's questionable character in his note from January 4, 1963, when he claimed to reproduce the disapproving observations of Novats's friend Magda Stroe, who had told him that she did not know anymore what this woman, meaning Novats, wanted. She did not get along with basic work discipline, preferring a life without employment, so as to work when she felt like it, and have endless conversations until midnight, etc. This bohemian outlook on life was, so Stroh, per Carl Fischer, further aggravated by Novats's desire to be different from others and to stand out. This individualistic, selfish disposition, however, had to give way, as Novats had to finally learn some truths and rules of society, stop living on other people's backs, and find out on her own that if you do not work, you do not eat. Carl Fischer's note thus strengthened Novats's depraved reputation, which source Magda had helped establish. At the latest, by January 28, 1962, When the source noted that Novats had taken vacation time, followed by an unpaid leave of absence for an unspecified duration because she did not like either her work or her workplace, her standing as a parasite seems buttressed. In the same note, the source indicated that Novats was getting her papers ready for a mariage de complaisance with a 50-year-old Hungarian because she continued to feel confined in her creative mission in Romania. Carl Fischer also revealed to the Securitate that Novats shrewdly used not her well-known literary alias, but her given name in those papers to avoid any difficulties with the Romanian authorities. If the Securitate needed more proof of Novats's debauched character, Carl Fischer produced it on May 8, 1963, when he included in his note Novats's alleged description of her fourth husband. He was a 60-year-old Hungarian national, a serious man and party activist whom she did not love. Yet she was so desperate to leave Romania that for a passport, she was willing to sell herself piece by piece. She hoped her future husband did not love her either, as that would only have complicated things. Consiliul de Stat, State Council, had approved their union, and she assumed that things had gone so fast because her trick had worked, and the authorities had not identified her under her given name, Zimra Harsanyi. A comment in Mensiun remarks indicates that the authorities had indeed not connected Harsanyi with Novats, despite Carl Fischer's warning from January 1963. Furthermore, Carl Fischer's note from May 8, 1963, also intimated that Novats did not hold Hungarians in high esteem, despite her cultural background and marriage to a Hungarian. To the contrary, she ostensibly described them as chauvinistic, mean, savage, a kind of mixture between Prussians and Mongols. Yet life in Hungary was considerably better than in Romania, since people enjoyed more freedom and could travel freely to Western countries, which was her ultimate goal. Novats's willingness to marry advantageously and even to live among a people she despised further revealed her egotistical nature and incriminated her with the Securitate. Carl Fischer's note also added yet another dimension to Novats's description as a parasite when he maintained that, in the West, she planned to live off the reparation money to which she was entitled as an Auschwitz survivor and descendant of victims of National Socialism. Purportedly, Novats counted on $8,000 for herself and her deceased parents and sister. Thus, Novats appeared willing and ready to profit even from her own family's tragedy. The extent of this tragedy from her own point of view, Novats had recorded in her Auschwitz diary, to which Carl Fischer also dedicated his attention. Already in November 1962, he described the diary as partly written in the camp and later edited, and claimed that Novats was having it translated into French for publication abroad, after having tried and failed to have it published in Romania. She was convinced that the publisher had rejected the work because of her controversial relation with Romania's political regime, not due to lack of quality. This information supplements Magda's from September 17th and October 25th, 1962, that Paul Schuster was working on a German translation of the diary and investigating options for the diary to be smuggled outside Romania. A year later, on March 13, 1963, Carl Fischer specified that while Novats had written the diary in Auschwitz at the age of 19, she estimated that she would never again write anything as good as that. After having read a quarter of it, he described it as a well-written work with novel images depicting the tormented life of the inmates in the camp from Auschwitz. The author was filled with natural and well-described hatred against the SS beasts and boundless feelings of revolt against acts of injustice and the permanent terror. Yet he also criticized it, claiming, "This revolt was, however, the spontaneously human reaction of the helpless, of the inmates who had lost not only their hope but also their dignity, their drive to fight." One did not learn anything about the numerous inmates who, although at times discouraged, fought with determination. One did not feel the presence of the communists. This take on Novotná's writing could suggest a reason for her failure to publish the diary in Romania. She would have had to alter it to fit the expectations of the regime, which meant somehow subordinate her survival to the communist cause and present it as an ideological rather than an existential struggle. And she was not prepared to do so, as her critique of the regime's infringement on artistic freedom, as reported by both Magda and Carl Fischer, proposed. Interestingly, at the time of Carl Fischer's note, Novotná's diary was already outside Romania, namely, in her future home country by choice, Hungary. According to a source named Kovács Péter, a Hungarian journalist identified as Adam Rafi had smuggled it into Hungary before October 1, 1962, when Kovács Péter had informed his case officer about it. This event had also surprised the Securitate, which, although warned about Novotná's intentions by both Magda and Carl Fischer, had failed to prevent it from happening. Novotná's surveillance seems to have been poorly coordinated, or at least poorly carried out, since the various Securitate departments and offices involved in her shadowing did not connect the dots correctly or in time with respect both to the smuggling of her diary in 1962 and, as already mentioned, to her application to marry a foreign national in 1963. Novotná's diary makes a last appearance in an informative note by Carl Fischer in August 1963. In it, he pointed out that the diary was already in France, where an unnamed publisher had read it in Romanian and had shown great interest in it. However, since Novotná did not have a French translation of it yet, she held back its publication. Also, while still waiting for her permission to leave Romania and join her husband in Hungary, she did not want to risk being arrested because her diary had been published in France. With this, Novotná's file story concludes, as inexplicably as it had begun, when source Magda took an interest in Novotná, although she was only expected to focus on Schuster. Its conclusion is typical for the narrative endings that files impose on people's lives. The narrative arc of her file story, though, tells us how precarious life was in communist Romania in the late 1950s and early 1960s, when a bad review in the party's journal was enough to destroy a writer's career, and one's reference in the informative note of a curious source could transform one into a target. Once Novotná succeeded in having her diary smuggled out of Romania for publication abroad, the Securitate had a solid reason to act against her, and both Novotná's life and file story might have ended differently had she not thwarted the Securitate's plot by deceiving the secret police and leaving the country. Through the informative notes of sources Magda and Carl Fischer, who reported on her between 1959 and 1963, the target Anna Novotná emerges as an enemy of the state. The two sources described her as erratic and capricious, as well as moody and constantly dissatisfied with her life in Romania. She was a parasite who did not lead a regular life in which she worked for an income, but rather relied on her former husbands to support her. Magda and Carl Fischer also ascribed to her a preference for a bourgeois, even bohemian, lifestyle, in which the mores and social norms of the communist state played no role. She emerges as a promiscuous woman, impelled by an adventurous spirit, which also drove her to leave Romania. Her decision to emigrate was thus not the result of the regime's oppressive nature and inability to deal with criticism, but a natural consequence of her carefree and thrill-seeking disposition. Consequently, the target Anna Novats was an ethnically unbound, psychologically volatile, and socially deviant cosmopolitan wanderer. Yet on October 11, 1963, a nota sintesa, synthesis note, concluded, "It does not follow that Harsanyi Zimra carries out a nationalistic activity organized against Romania's socialist state. Some acts of discontent are of material nature, and others stem from her adventurous spirit, which possesses her to leave the country, something she has done already." With this, her file was closed, and the two sources concluded their activities involving her, at a time when Novats, under the name Zimra Micu, had already departed from Romania on September 20, 1963. As a target, Novats acquired a new identity, one that the Securitate configured based on its sources' informative notes and reports and classified according to stock types of enemies of the state. She fit the type of the critical bourgeois intellectual. Yet as an ethnically Jewish, culturally Hungarian Romanian citizen, Novats also eluded a linear configuration, which led the Securitate to oscillate between labeling her a Jew, a Hungarian, or a Romanian. This hybridity, coupled with Novats's critique of the regime, enhanced the threat she could pose to the Romanian state. It is thus surprising that Novats escaped from Romania and was able to do so legally. Was it professional negligence on the part of the Securitate officers charged with her surveillance, considering that Magda's and Carl Fischer's notes incriminated her? Did the Securitate simply lose interest in her? Her file story ends anticlimactically, without providing answers to these questions, or any indications that Novats had escaped the Securitate's gaze completely, or for good. Another file, harboring another file story, set in a different time, 1981 to 1986, and place, Paris, France, speaks not only to Novats's ongoing criticism of Romania's communist regime, but also to the Securitate's persistence in pursuing its targets even across time and space.